Welcome back to another episode of the Shooter's Touch. We have our second Mason City native, a head coach from right here in the Des Moines area in the CIML, head coach, girls basketball coach at Johnston High School, Coach Chad Jillick. Coach Jillick has had multiple years of experience as a head coach, as I mentioned, originally from Mason City, was a coach there for a little while, ended up here as an assistant at Waukee, and then moved into the Johnston job when that opened up. Most recently, last year, they finished number one in the state of Iowa, won the state championship, and he was named the All-Iowa Girls Basketball Coach of the Year. Obviously, two great honors. The Johnston team has had some great teams come through and should have another one here this upcoming year. We talk obviously about everything from childhood, growing up, other sports, why Coach Jillick loves coaching so much, and much, much more. So we hope you enjoyed as much as we did. Here is Coach Chad Jillick.
WB Realty, Central Iowa's premier real estate brokerage. WB has all the tools and the resources needed to make your next real estate transaction your best. Go to WBRealty.com to find out more information today.
I got the shooter's touch. Can't nobody shoot like me. Fourth quarter down three, need a 2-1. Better call on me. If you know you need a shooter, I'm ice cold like a cooler. Get you right though, I can tutor. This that mic flow, I'm a hooper. I got blue faces. I'm too.
Welcome back, shooters. We have another guest on the podcast this week from the Des Moines metro area. We have Johnston's girls head basketball coach, Chad Jillick. Coach, welcome to the Shooter's Touch.
Hey, thanks. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, this is, not 2 weeks in a row, but Mason City. We got a little bit of Mason City, North Central Iowa connection going on here. So we'll get into that, though.
All right.
Coach, first thing I want to talk about, I was thinking a little bit about this last March, the big news, obviously state champions and the run that you guys went on, and we'll want to talk about that. But as we're sitting here dealing with the day-to-day situation with COVID, it's weird to think about that March and how things went down and the fact that like that was one of the last games played in front of fans and just that whole situation on how we had no idea what was coming. Walk us through a little bit, obviously a lot to unpack with this one, obviously your group of seniors and the experience that they had. And then obviously ultimately capping it off, with the state championship last March, and, just walk us through a little bit of the experience and the emotions that, you and your team went through.
Well, yeah, that was, really kind of unexpected for me. I guess I thought we had a really good team, but we've had a really good team for the last 7 years. And I think, you know, two of the years, we were the number one seed of the state tournament. And both of those years, I thought we were the best team in the state. And both of those years, we ended up short, runner up 1 year. And then we lost a 7-point lead with 90 seconds left the year before the state championship. And, you know, I thought both those years we were the best team. It just didn't happen. And then this year going in, I was like, yeah, you know what? We have a good team, but we lost some pretty key pieces from that semifinal the year before. So I was like, you know what? We have a chance, but I just don't know if we're going to be quite good enough to do it. And then as the season went on, just so many different girls stepped up and played so much better than I can had even anticipated that they were going to do. And, you know, that just carried us through. And it was just, not expected. The girls told me that. I mean, when we got to the playoffs, I had our senior leaders, they came to me and they just kept saying, we're going to win the state title, coach. We're going to win the state title. And I just kept, yep, great, that's awesome. But thinking in the back of my head, you know, that's hard. I mean, they don't understand. You got to get lucky. You know, everything's got to roll your way. It's a one game deal. And they ended up, you know, they did it themselves. They played so well that there wasn't a team that was going to beat us last year.
And going through that group of seniors, obviously a ton of experience. Like you mentioned, they went to state all 4 years. It's those three, Maya specifically, obviously played all 4 years. Ton of experience. A lot of, as we've seen in the last several years, it's a lot of the same matchups when you get down to state that you guys see in the CIML with how competitive the league is. And so going through some of your matchups, was it first round was the Southeast Polk matchup, right? And that was, that's been traditionally over that same stretch been a good matchup between you and them.
Yeah, Southeast Polk is, they're one of the programs that, I mean, they're always in the top 10 also. They've gone through maybe a couple down years, maybe not quite to their the previous few, and then the last two were just really good. They had some really good young kids. Grace Larkins is one of the best players in the state for girls, and she'll be back this year again as a senior. And it's always just the way that we play and the way that they play is just kind of button heads. We want to play fast. We want to play inside out. We've always had some height. And they really don't have an inside game, so they've always just tried to beat the crap out of us when we're playing. And sometimes our girls respond, and sometimes they don't. But we, I think we've got them the last three times here, so we've done pretty well with them. It's just kind of a matter of how our girls kind of handle the physicality that they're going to try to put on us. Because I don't know that Johnston's necessarily a real physical team. We're not really thought of that. We were more of a finesse and get up and down fast and try to get a shot up before, you know, the defense gets down there. And but yeah, it's always a tough matchup. Trace does a great job with her team at Southeast Polk. They always have good players. I mean, I can see Southeast Polk kids all the way down through, you know, fifth grade playing all winter when I'm at my daughter's tournaments and all through. So they're always going to have a good team, and it's always fun to play them.
I remember, so I think it was, would have been not last year, but the year before, game against Southeast Polk at your guys' place. I think there was, you guys, I think at least three girls had scored 20 points. I think they had three girls that had scored 20 points. You guys were up and down. I mean, that was an entertaining basketball game.
I tell everybody that I think if you're looking for entertaining basketball, girls, and most people think, well, girls basketball, I'm not going to go watch that. It's not. If you get in our conference in the CIML and you're watching like top 10 teams play, to me, it's more exciting than the boys games. Boys games are usually half court. Coaches like to try to control it, run lots of sets and plays. And the girls of the good programs, it's just throw the ball out there. We want you to get up and down as fast as you can, have fun while you're playing, and score a lot of points. And yeah, you're right. That game I think was like 90-70. You know, we've had a few games like that where we've won, you know, 90-85 or 90-80. And that's the way we like to play. You know, we've typically just tried to outscore people, which, you know, is fun and good. And there's sometimes you got to play defense. So I always got to do a better job trying to get our girls to play defense. But I was always a shooter and I just want to score. And that's what I try to teach the girls. We got to do that. So.
That's music to Adam and I's ears. So you're good with that. That's the reason why this is a Shooter's Touch. So, and you talked a little bit about it too. Is some young girls on your team that stepped up big? Obviously, Anna Gosling, one of the ones that just stepped in. I don't know if you saw that coming or not, because had a heck of a year last year and made some big shots and some big plays for you down the state tournament as well.
Well, yeah, she was kind of our sixth player as a freshman. And as a freshman, she's going to go through growing pains, but that really was a little disappointed in what she did as a freshman. I kind of thought and expected I was going to get more out of her. So going into her sophomore year, we talked about, you know, we're going to need more. You're going to have to be a scorer. You're going to have to step up. And she did for the most part all year. She played, you know, fairly consistent. But at the state tournament, she was one of the best players that played. Like, she was a big key, a big factor in us being able to win those three games in those 3 days, because she averaged about, I think, 15, 16 points a game, played really good defense, you know, shot a high percentage from the three. You know, she's our best three-point shooter. She set our record last year for free throw percentage, over 90% on the season. And, you know, but she's just a hard worker. So far this year, you know, she's usually in our gym four times a week at 6 a.m. to 7 a.m., getting up 700 threes. And then I get the percentage sent to me at school, you know, what she had and what it was. And it's always, she's, you know, shooting 700 threes at 70, 75% on the machine. And so she puts in that work. And so I expected that. I was hoping I was going to get that out of her. And, I mean, she delivered. We played Iowa City High in that semifinal. And if you looked on that floor, City High had four Division I girls on the floor on their team. You know, we had three. I mean, that's 10 girls were Division I basketball players, and Anna was one of the top two or three players on the floor. And I've told everybody that if we didn't have her that game, that she was a difference maker.
Yeah, I agree. I was impressed with her all year, but really impressed with what she did down at Des Moines. And you mentioned that Iowa City, that City High game. I was a little surprised by that. I thought that there would be a few matchup situations or issues that you guys might run into with that. But overall, I mean, watching that game, I thought you guys were pretty much in control. It seemed to be that things were clicking for you guys. You seemed to breeze right through them and head on to take on Waukee.
It was. They have the Jones girl who's always going to be a matchup problem, but Kendall Need is – we have her as a great defender. So, you know, when we can put her on anybody's best player, it's always going to, help in that matchup with us. But we always had two girls that were mismatches for other teams, and Maya and Kendall. Kendall, I don't know, most people don't know this. Like, Kendall was in middle school like a B-team player. And then as a freshman, she wanted to play up on our JV. And I said, well, I think you need to stay at the freshman level right now. I think you probably could play in the JV, but being the seventh or eighth girl on the JV and, you know, playing half a game is not going to help you as much as being on the freshman team and playing the whole game and having to do more things than you've ever had to do in your life. And she wasn't happy about that. But by the end of the year, she came up to me and her parents came to me and said, you know, we were mad, but we're so glad that you did that for her because that made her so much better. Put her in situations that she'd never had to do. Maya, you know, you can stand around and watch Maya in that grade all the time. And so now having to have the ball in her hands all the time as a freshman helped her grow. And she just got the bug of wanting to be better and better. So she went from, I said, like a B team player in seventh, grade to being a first team all state kid last year, one of the best five players in class 5A. And that was another big key for us. I didn't know that, I knew she was going to be a good player for us, but she went from being, better than average as a junior to being elite as a senior, and, having two elite players in at that level really helped out.
Yeah, her transformation, I think, is one that if you followed the program closely at all, you watched. I mean, I remember watching her as a sophomore get some spot minutes, but I really liked her game. I thought she had a good shot. I thought that obviously her length and everything was good. And, in the minutes that she played. And then her junior year, obviously, the role increased a little bit. But that growth that she made from her junior year, senior year, physically, mentally, I mean, you're right. I mean, she went from a good player to all of a sudden one of the best players in the league and a tough guard for anybody. On all three levels out there, and you put her with Maya, and then obviously Maddie and her experience and the whole team's experience. You guys had a fun team to watch. You mentioned it before. I think that the state of Iowa girls basketball, what it's been and what it's going to be here in the last 5 years, has been a lot of fun to watch and a lot of high-end, high-caliber players.
Well, yeah, and that there's so many more girls now that are playing basketball year-round. That there's people think of Iowa as, well, we're not a basketball hotbed, but we've got so many kids now that are playing basketball that are, going on to play Division I and Division II basketball that, when I grew up in the 90s, there wasn't, if you had a girl play at your high school that was going to go play college basketball, so that, I mean, that was almost an anomaly at that time, where now, I've got four kids over the last 3 years playing Division I basketball. I've had, I think, two or three before that that were playing Division I basketball or could have, but ended up wanting to play other sports also, that we just got so many kids that are playing year-round that it's – I mean, it's good and it's bad, but, I mean, it helps us at the high school level because those kids are now ready to play and can step in and, like you said, play a fun style too.
I think it'd be interesting to go through the conference, go through the CIML, and just look at how many girls throughout the entire league that have gone on to play at the next level, because I think it would be eye-popping.
Almost every school has had multiple players over the last 10 years, that are playing, college basketball. So, I mean, I have, just talking about, the Division I players that we've had, I think on that team from last year, my daughter's going to go on and play college basketball. She's going to be senior this year. Anna Gosling started. She's going to go on and play college basketball somewhere. The girls that came off the bench for us that played minutes, that's their goal, and they're all good enough, and they're all going to go play college. I mean, so when all your players are college basketball players, it makes it really easy as a coach. you know, to win games. And so I tell everybody the only thing that I can do is mess them up. And so I got to try not to mess them up as much as possible.
And that's been, you know, like you said, that's been a big part of the process too, just getting that experience and, you know, trying to foster the talent. And now that you're on top, coach, now you got a little bit different expectations. So a little bit different grind for you.
It is. But I think we're there. I think we've been having open gyms right now in the fall where we have 25 kids there. And as our coaches are watching them play, we're looking at, you know what, we got 25 kids here and we can split teams up and have 23 out of those 25. I mean, they can all play, and which is good, but it's also hard now as a coach where I got to try to figure out, I can't play 15 kids. I mean, we got to, you know, try to, I mean, there's going to be, you know, girls that are unhappy because they're not playing as much, or there's some young, talented young kids that are coming in that are, you know, maybe taking some spots from, you know, kids that have been in the program for 4 years and, you know, trying to, you know, wade through those waters and make sure that everybody understands their role and try to keep everybody happy so that, you know, the season doesn't get derailed in that, that way. It's hard, but, you know, I'd rather have it that way than, you know, not having girls that could play. So
that's a big thing that I was just going to say as you bringing that up. I mean, just the sheer numbers, obviously girls sports in general, depending on what the sport is, basketball specifically, not everybody has that fortunate ability that you have to be able to pick and choose and have a good number and be able to have girls go up and down. And that's huge for a program. It's huge for a program this season, but it's huge for a program 3 years from now, 6 years from now. And so obviously you instill that in a young age, and obviously the youth program, JVC, and some of the stuff that you guys have going on really helps feed into that program. But it's huge for the future of what you guys are trying to do.
Yeah, I think that, I took over here, and they had a losing record the couple years before, and then we had a losing record my first year. We just didn't have the types of basketball players that the other teams had at that point. And so we really focused on, we got to get these young kids playing. But it also helped that my first year here, our eighth grade class was probably the best class. It could have probably the best class in the state of Iowa. I mean, there were, you know, 6'4" Taryn Canute, who could have went on and played Division I basketball any place she wanted, playing All-American volleyball player at Florida State right now. Ellie Brown, point guard, started as a freshman too when they came in that second year. She went on to play at Missouri. Rachel Hinders was a year older, and then she's playing Division II. So that second year, we started having success, and that feeds into those young kids. And so we would try to get youth teams and young kids to our games on all those, home games, try to get them in the locker room, get the girls hanging out with them, trying to get them excited about wanting to be part of, Johnston basketball. When I took over, I always tell people that, you know, Johnston basketball was probably the fourth thing on the totem pole for Johnston girls in what they wanted to do. At that point, volleyball was rolling and been to the state tournament for 7-8 years in a row, won a state title. Soccer was at the state tournament every year, and there's millions of kids playing soccer. And the softball team had been winning state titles and going to the state tournament every year, and basketball just wasn't. And we had to try to get all those kids to, you know, it's okay to play multiple sports. We had to get some of those kids that were quitting basketball to focus on other sports to stay out with us. And that helped. We started winning, so more kids started playing in basketball. And right now I've gotten to the point where, which I don't know if you might look at it, it might not be a good thing or a bad thing, depending on how you perceive two sport athletes, is we've got a lot of basketball first kids now. I mean, I probably got 15 kids I'm going to put on my basketball roster this year that are all basketball first. And only a couple of them play a second sport, which, you know, I got some volleyball players, I got some soccer players. But in the past, it was, I'm going to spend all my time on that other sport, and then I'll just play basketball with you guys in the winter. And now it's more, I'm going to spend all my time on basketball, and I'll play with you guys, my soccer team, my softball team, during your season. And, having that change has helped with, you know, the competitiveness of our girls and our practices and our open gyms, and, you know, put some responsibility on the kids to be at summer workouts and, you know, to work on their skill.
It's incredible, you know, how much having that buy-in from the athletes, from young all the way up to, you know, a senior there, helps out a program. And, you know, you see each end of the spectrum here in Iowa. I feel like, you know, you'll have some programs that probably don't even have enough girls or athletes to have a team. And so it helps out
a lot, and obviously a good thing for a coach to have that buy-in as well. But let's jump into you, Coach. What where'd you grow up? What was childhood like, and how did I get basketball specifically, but athletics, you know, play into your childhood?
I grew up in the 80s, so everything we did was basically, you know, no phones, no computers. We were outside all the time just playing whatever sport it was. We played everything. And
weird.
Grew up in Mason City. And so it was, you know, summertime. We got up and left the house at 8 a.m. And we came back at, 8 or 9 at night. And we were out, had played, you know, wiffle ball for a few hours and gotten the basketball out and played football and, you know, golf. I mean, we were doing everything. So I just liked any type of sport that I could play. I'm pretty competitive. My wife will tell you she won't play any types of games with me because I'm too competitive and want to win at all those things. So, but I really grew up playing everything. So I really was into high school. I played. I played football as a freshman, and then stopped. And I played basketball and baseball, and went on and played at Mason City High School. So I was at Mason City High School, and then went on to play college baseball. I wasn't. So I can shoot the basketball, but I'm not real fast, and I didn't really play defense. So I would be on the basketball court, and I would shoot the three, and that was probably about it. And so I always get made fun of. I go back to our alumni games. I used to, and everybody knew I could shoot, so they would just stand by me at the three-point line and not let me do anything. And I couldn't really play defense, but, if I was open, I'd hit the shot. So basketball was never, though, my first – you know, love. I was always a baseball player. I loved baseball. I thought that I had the chance to, maybe go somewhere with baseball. And I thought maybe I wanted to be a college baseball coach after graduating. So I did that for a few years after I graduated from college, and figured out being a college coach doesn't pay very much unless you're at like the big time program. So, I figured I could make more teaching and coaching than I could, you know, being an assistant baseball coach at a small college or even a head baseball coach at a small college. So I jumped into coaching or teaching, back into teaching, and I've coached everything from there. So I just love sports. Like I've coached, you know, girls basketball, boys basketball. I've coached volleyball. I've coached golf, softball and baseball. Right now I still coach girls tennis. I just like to be part of sports and athletics. So, I said baseball is always probably my favorite, but I never really, not that much over any other sport.
Yeah. Well, your basketball game sounds like fits in very well with having me and Brian here. So, you're in about the same company right now, I think. So, who's your head basketball coach at Mason City?
Bob Horner. Bob Horner was my coach. Horner family, good friends with the Horners right now. He had two daughters that were around my age. Grew up with them. Jeff was a young one. Jeff's funny because I still talk with Jeff, and he was in elementary school when I was in high school. So he was one of those little mouthy kids that would run around practice talking about how good he was and, kind of like he does now. So, and he'd always want to have a shooting contest with me. I think I told his dad last summer, I said, I think Jeff still owes me, like, I can't even tell you like how many pizzas that kid owes me from all the times he ran his mouth and wanted to have a shooting contest when he was little. So he still owes me a bunch.
Yeah, from when he was around here, after playing professionally and, you know, coaches in the Valley and stuff like that. We've had some run-ins with him on the basketball court too. And, you talk about competitive. That's one of the top words to describe Jeff Horner for sure.
Yeah, I stopped playing basketball when I tore my Achilles tendon 5 years ago. I went back to play in our Mohawk Alumni Classic over Christmas every year. They would do that. And I was about 40, so I was older. I was getting older. And they always have kind of an all-star thing at the end. They'd have the Mason City from the Mason City alumni, and then the Newman alumni, and then the last game of the night would be their seven or eight on the Mohawk seven or eight. And they needed one more guy. And I was like, they said, hey, you know what? You come do it. And I was like, I'm not going to out you guys. I'm old. I can't do anything. And they're like, we just need somebody. So I told Jeff, I was like, all right. I said, but I'm just going to sub for you. I know you're never going to come out, right? You're never going to want to sub. So when you need a minute, I'll come in. So the first time he comes out, I go in. I was in for about 30 seconds, and I blew my Achilles tendon, and I was so mad. So I haven't played since then, but that was my last time being competitive.
You know, I can't speak for Brian, but I know that that's why I retired a couple of years back as well, not from having that injury, but from being afraid of having that injury, for sure.
Yes. It wasn't fun.
That North Iowa alumni thing was a big deal. I remember seeing obviously stuff with Jeff, but because didn't you bring in some other schools? Was there ever a time where there was like a bunch of North Iowa schools, or how did they do that? Did you play at NIAC or something like that too?
They did, yes. One time, well, they tried to do kind of just an alumni tournament for any high schools, and they ran it at NIAC. I tried to do it for a couple of years. I think I played once. I don't know how long it went on. But yeah, that started when I was in high school, and it was I loved it when I was in high school, because the boys basketball team had to be the scorekeepers at the alumni, so we would all sign up for times, and we would come back, and we'd watch all the older guys, they'd come back and compete all day, and we'd keep score, and even if I wasn't in charge of doing a score at the table, we'd come and watch, and it was always fun, and we were always excited that, hey, when we're out of high school, we're going to come back and play in this. And so it was pretty big for a while. And then I think, you know, kind of in the 2000s, it started dying down a little bit. There wasn't as many alumni coming back. And I don't even know if they still do it anymore right now. But it was always, I always tried to make it back if I could.
That's awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Obviously, we talk to a lot of coaches on this podcast. And everybody, you know, has a similar story, but not necessarily the exact same. So when did you know you wanted to be a coach? And what was, you know, who was an influence in that?
Well, I think when I was in middle school, I had a PE teacher that was, he coached and he was an official and he was just a great guy. He still lives in Mason City, Mr. Sweeter. He always comes back and he would always talk about sports with you. And he was one of my favorite teachers that I ever had. And so as I started growing up, I was like, I'd love to do something like that. I mean, I went into teaching to be a PE teacher. I'm going to be a PE teacher and a coach. And then I kind of got derailed a little bit when my college advisor said, you're never going to find a PE job. Those are hard to get. Why don't you do something, maybe do a elementary education or something? I was like, okay, if I can find a job easier. So I kind of switched majors, but I knew I was going to coach. And I didn't necessarily know that, you know, basketball and baseball, I knew I would, and I really wanted to. But if it wasn't for him, I probably don't know, you know, what I would have done. I wasn't necessarily, you know, keen on anything else or trying to, you know, have anything else in my mind. I just knew I wanted to be around sports, you know, as part of my life, because it was a big part of my life growing up. And so that was the one way I knew that I could, I'm not going to go play in the NBA or the Major League Baseball, but I could still stay involved with sports through coaching, especially young kids and at the high school level. So, you know, I kind of credit him with giving me the bug to, you know, look at that as a career.
Well, you're not the first one that has said that, you know, physical education teacher is the reason they got into it. So that's a very cool story. What was your first coaching job?
I coached some U sports when I was in high school. And I got involved with, you know, doing little league baseball, basketball at the Y for youth. My first kind of paid coaching job was at Remsen St. Mary's. I got thrown into the fire as the boys coach when I was like 20 years old. I was in the middle of, I transferred to a school called Westmar University over by Sioux City. And I was redshirting that year. So I was like, hey, I need a part-time job here. So they need an assistant basketball coach at this, you know, small school. It's only got like 80 kids in it. And it's about, you know, 10 miles away from Lamar's, where Westmar was. So I applied, and I was like probably the only one that applied. So they gave me the job. And after about three games, the guy that was the head coach, he'd been done it for a few years, and they had only won maybe two or three games in 3 years. He just like, yeah, I'm done. I'm quit. So the AD calls me in. He goes, well, he just quit. He goes, do you want to be the head coach? And I go, I'm still in college. I mean, I don't even know, you know, what to do. He goes, well, I think you can do it. I wouldn't ask you if I didn't think you could do it. He goes, it was, you know, St. Mary's. So they had one of the Catholic priests there. He was the eighth grade coach. And they go, well, Father Schoen, he'll do it. He'll do it if you don't. But we think you can do it. He'll just help you out. He wants you to help you. So I was like, all right, give me at least a day. I got to go talk to my baseball coach and, you know, make sure it's going to work out since I'm redshirting. And I did it. So we did it. And I think we ended up winning like 3 games, but it was hard. I called Coach Horner at Mason City right away. I said, hey, I'm going to be home over Christmas break. I need like a binder of just plays, drills, whatever you can give me, because I need to make sure I look like I know what I'm doing, at least. Just being 20 years old. So that was my first time. And then after that, I was out for, I then I was playing baseball and out of coaching for a little bit. But that was my first job. You remember Jared Holman?
Yeah.
Jared Holman and I, so Iowa State. So Jared Holman was an eighth grader the year that I was the head coach there. And he had a brother that was, I think, a ninth grader or 10th grader that played for me. And so Jared was, the eighth graders would practice. We had one gym, so they always practice in there too. With us. And so that's why I always tell everybody, I didn't get to coach him. He was in eighth grade, talked to him, you know, saw him. He was part of our program, but that was kind of the one thing that people know Rems and St. Mary's.
Wow. That's fun. And, you know, honestly, it's crazy how many coaches we do talk to, on the podcast and just in general that have told us a story like that, just kind of getting thrown into the fire and making it work and, you know, realizing that you have a love for it. So that's a really good story.
Yeah. I was scared. I was literally scared being 20 years old. And there's some, you know, 18 year olds there I'm coaching that, you know, I'm not any older than, probably not any better than, and, you know, trying to get them to listen to me and respect me. And they actually did. It was, I mean, I give them a lot of credit. They had, I think they had fun. I knew we weren't very good and they hadn't won a lot of games. So we just tried to kind of have fun and, you know, and I think they did. And it was a great experience.
Yeah, that, like Adam said, that's one theme that we always ask them whether or not they were ready. It sounded like in that situation, you had no choice but to just get ready in that case and trial by fire, which is not always the worst thing either.
No, it forced you to, you know, look like as a player, you think you know things, and then it's totally different as a coach of how you have to get these kids prepared and get them thinking about for their opponents. And It was difficult but it was fun.
So when you transitioned then back to playing after coaching, did you have an appreciation for your coaches and what you guys were trying to accomplish and maybe understand now seeing behind the curtain a little bit?
Well, it's funny you say that because no, then I not that I'm thinking about that right now that I did, because, you know, I still thought about my coaches. Like, yeah, that guy doesn't know what he's talking about, or this, you know, he's trying to tell me something, but I know better. And it didn't, you know, you would think it, maybe it would, give me a better appreciation, but now that I think about it, I don't think that it did right away.
It's funny how it just takes a little time, a little maturation to be able to figure that out, but eventually we get there, like, man, that guy actually, he knew what he was doing. But
yes,
so then after that, so walk us through a little bit of the timeline here, getting you to Johnston, after college. Then where did you get your start, and what was the path like?
I started, I said, I ended up graduating from Mount St. Clair College in Clinton, that's where I met my wife. She's from Clinton, Iowa. And then I subbed for about 3 years and was the assistant baseball coach there. And that's when I got out and said, okay. I started working at Clinton High School, thought I'd make a little bit more money as a teacher, and got into coaching their softball team and the boys basketball team. I was a sophomore boys coach there for a couple years. And after about 3 years, we decided to move back to Mason City. And at Mason City, I just moved because my best friend got the boys baseball job. And so I wanted to be a baseball coach. And so I went and helped him for 5 years, at baseball. Didn't get on in the district there, my first year. So at North Springs Rock Falls, which is now consolidated into Central Springs, I was the head boys basketball coach for a year. Randy Hoffman had been there for like 25 years, great coach. He retired, they needed a coach. And I had applied for a teaching job that I didn't get, but they said, well, we want you to coach. And I was like, well, I can't coach if I don't have a teaching job. So they gave me like a special ed teaching job so I could coach the basketball team for 1 year. And then I was able to get on at Mason City. The girls coach at Mason City's name was Dave Sassetti. He was my sophomore boys coach at Mason City High School. He had a daughter, so he went into girls. And then I applied for that job and ended up getting that job. And I probably wouldn't have got that job if they would have got better candidates. I don't think a lot of people applied. And I'd coached for a few years, been a Mason City alumni and knew the AD real well. And so they ended up, giving me that job. And I got on to Mason City for 3 years, but it didn't last very long. Like, our baseball team was really good. I coached the boys golf team and assistant baseball and head girls basketball. Our baseball team was in the top 3 and 4 for that 5 year. We were in the state tournament every year, ranked number one many times during that. And I was like, this is what I want to do. This is awesome. But then after 3 years of basketball, I think we won like 10 games in 3 years trying to play in the CIML, and we just didn't have players. And they finally basically asked me to resign. So they basically fired me. It was kind of fun. It's not something I always liked to talk about, but now that, I'm in a different situation where we're having success, it's a little bit easier. But the AD at one point, I was in his office a couple weeks before the end of the season, and we were just talking. I was telling him how frustrated and how hard it is. Like, we're trying to play these teams with all these great athletes and basketball players. I don't have anybody that could play in any one of those teams, and we're trying to compete with them. We're losing by 30. My first year, we're probably losing by 40 points a game. My second year, we're losing by 30 points a game. My fourth year, we got down to about 20 points a game. And I was starting like 3 or 4 freshmen at that point, thinking, okay, it'll still take a couple more years. And he came up to me. He's like, oh, you're doing everything you can. I know what you got. You're fine, and you're doing great. Just keep doing what you're doing. Then 2 weeks later, he comes to me and says, I think we need you to resign. And I was like, whoa, what? You just told me I was doing this great job. You knew what was going on here. And well, the superintendent now got involved. So, he wants you to resign. And so I kind of fought it for a week, but I was like, if they don't want me around, then I don't want to be here. So I ended up resigning and applying for a job as a teacher at Waukee. And I just got the job, and then got on the basketball staff there too and helped him for 5 years. And so that's really kind of what probably got me the job at Johnston is, the 5 years I was at Waukee, we were ranked number one and in the state tournament and semifinals almost all 5 of those years. And the Johnston job came open. Actually, the 3 jobs, Southeast Polk, Johnston, and Valley all came open, like 3, you would say, pretty high-profile jobs. And if I wasn't at Waukee for those 5 years where we were doing really well and I was his assistant, I probably wouldn't have got the job at Johnston based on what happened at Mason City and my record. But Gary took a chance on me, and I from there, it's just, been what, this is my 9th year, been in the state tournament now 6 years in a row, and in the championship game twice, and there's a lot of success. And then everybody comes back to you and says, well, what are you doing here that you didn't do at Mason City? What happened there? And I'm like, I'm not doing anything that I did different. Like, we're doing the same thing. It's just that I had one kid in Mason City in 3 years that could have played on any of my teams here in Johnston. Like, it's just the players and the athletes, and the players and athletes make the coach. The coach has to help, a little bit, but it's the players and the athletes, and they buy in and they work hard, and you got them, you're going to win.
Yeah, that's the one thing that whenever we have high school coaches on too, we credit the most. It's so different than the college level, because obviously the college level, you can go out and you can find players, you can bust your ass and recruit and get the guys that or the girls that fit your style and your program. But the high school level, you got to take what's coming, and you have these youth programs and you try to develop them the best you can. But it definitely still takes some talent to be able to win. And obviously here in recent years, Mason City, with those sisters that come through, have had a little bit of talent. But just that little corner or section of the state up there has struggled to compete, with the likes of Central Iowa. And it's definitely an uphill battle up in Mason City.
If you look up there in North Iowa, I mean, they're 2 hours from Des Moines and 2 hours from Minneapolis. So if those kids want to really get involved in year-round basketball, they're going to have to travel all the time, and it's hard for them. So all the girls that have had success up there are girls that you see have kind of played all year round, and they've taken the time to drive back and forth from Ames or a different program, 2 or 3 times a week for years. And when I was up there, Jada Buckley, who's one of the best players ever out of Iowa, went to Iowa State, started there. They had the Melman sisters. Those kids were all in fourth and like fifth grade when I was my last year up there. And so I spent a ton of time with those kids. Like, we knew, this is what you just said, is like, you're stuck with what you got. So I didn't, there wasn't anything I was going to be able to do with the high school kids at that time. I was like, you know, we're going to try to do our best to win. We're going to have open gyms. We're going to do workouts. But if we really want to turn this around and start winning up here in Mason City, we're going to have to get with the youth. So we started spending tons of time with all those youth players. So when they asked me to resign, I mean, it was a little bittersweet because I knew that, well, it's about 3 or 4 years away until I know all these kids I've been working with are going to get up here. And once they did, I mean, you could saw the success that they had. And it wouldn't have mattered who was coaching. I mean, I could have been coaching them. Somebody, Coach Clausen up there right now is coaching them. It could have been anybody else. But you bring those types of players in, they're going to have success, and they're going to be, you know, they're going to win a lot of basketball games. So, you know, it's a credit to all those players. I mean, I have right now at Johnston, I think we probably had all 20 girls, 9th through 12. If I went eighth grade through 12th grade, 20 to 25 girls that play in the spring and summer, and they're playing year round. If I go to a school like Mason City, they got like maybe one or two because of, you know, it's easy for us where we're at and the, you know, the facilities that we got here. So, you know, it makes my job a lot easier.
I feel like the class change thing helped them a little bit too. They probably got put in where they needed to be.
Yeah, that did. And that was always, I mean, that's always a big, I go back to Mason City all the time, and my parents still live up there, and my brother. And so we're back there all the time. And my friends are still up there talking about how, yeah, they need to be, you know, probably a class down. They just don't have, I mean, when I was in high school, we had, you know, close to 1,000 kids in the high school. Now it's, you know, you're at what, 600, 700 maybe. Where they're just trying to compete with Johnston, where we have 2,000 kids, and Valley 2,400, and Waukee, you know, 3,000. I mean, all these, it's just impossible almost for them to compete.
It is. I definitely would agree with that change. I know it makes it a little bit harder, but for the association, but as far as the 5A level, the 5A level is where it needs to be, and those teams can compete at the 4A level. So, hey, one thing I want to touch on is your time at Central Springs. If I bring up the name Sam Huey, does that ring a bell at all? Was Sam Huey one of your players?
Yeah, Sam Huey was a senior. He might have been my best player. You know Sam?
Yeah, I do. He came in. He came to Wartburg. So he played a little bit of Wartburg, and yeah. So I started thinking about that. I'm like, I think Jilk was Huey's coach there.
I was his coach our last year. I think we were like 11-13 or something. We were average. We were decent, not great. But I think he works around here somewhere. I just saw him maybe last year. As a physical therapist or something, or
he works out Rock Valley physical therapy out there in Waukee. So him and his family live out in Waukee, and he married a Wartburg girl too. And so definitely small world in that conference, that league that you're playing in, with like Nashua and Northwood, like a lot of buddies that ended up coming and playing with me at Wartburg would have been around that same time. Even Sheffield. A lot of those guys, Faborg and Lee Nelson and John Trost, all those guys ended up coming and playing at Wartburg.
That's true. I remember Nelson for sure. I mean, Nashua, Northwood, and Sheffield were all good, really good basketball teams.
Yeah, that was a pretty competitive. What's the conference called? Corn something?
It was the Corn Bowl Conference. I don't know what it is what it is now. You can say that's a typical small town Iowa conference, right? The Cornhole.
It's an Iowa conference.
I think I always just referred to it as the Cornhole or something. I don't think those guys always appreciated that. But that was good. That was competitive basketball. But hey, so one of the other things too I want to talk about, you touched on it, but obviously the coaching bug, you love it because you spend your summers coaching too. You help out up at Attack, correct?
I do. I have the last 3 or 4 years now, and I'm really got into it because of my daughters. It's like, well, if I'm going to have to follow my daughters around and they're going to play, then I might as well go up there and coach too. So, and my kids are not like, so I tell everybody, like, some people are like, well, why are you, do the kids have to play year round? Do they have to play AAU? And I'm like, well, no, they don't. I don't think you have to play year round at all. That's up to you. The problem just gets to where, if you have 15 girls that are doing it and you're not, then lots of times it's not that, you know, you're not, it's just that they're getting that much better where you're not getting that much. You might be getting better, but they're getting better a lot, you know, faster, quicker. And so you get passed up. So my kids were like that. My kids are not great athletes. They're not, you know, going to be just natural basketball players. So my daughter started for us last year as a junior, and, she was, to me, a key component because she did everything that I would ask her to do. She was, I kind of call her a coach's kid, where if she has to be in the help position, she's going to be in the help position. She's not going to force up a shot. She's going to get it to Maya and Kendall and the girls that can score. She's going to play good man one-on-one defense. She's not going to turn the ball over. And she did that and got that way because she played a lot of basketball year round, where if she didn't do that, I don't know that she could have played for me. Like if she wasn't playing in the spring and summer at those points, I was like, I had so many kids that were and just great athletes and actual basketball players that she probably wouldn't have ever been able to step on the floor for me. But since she did, I think that helped her, be able to play for us. So, it's, you know, and that's not that I necessarily want to coach, you know, 12 months a year. I mean, I like it. It doesn't sound like it bothers me. But I like some time off too. I did that really with the Attack. You know, Attack's a great program for girls basketball. I mean, I credit them. I mean, if there's a good basketball player in our conference, most likely they were playing at Attack and they've been doing it year round. And it's different. You know, I could put a high school practice out there where I do have good basketball players and we're practicing against each other. But if they can go up and then get a two-hour practice a couple times a week in the spring and the summer against the best basketball players in the state of Iowa, well, they're playing against the best all the time. It's going to force them to get better in situations where I can't do that necessarily with, you know, in a Johnston practice or a Johnston workout, because we're just not all going to be at that same level.
Well, hey, let's jump into upcoming year here, Coach. Obviously, with COVID going around and stuff like that, a lot of stuff is, you know, not really sure about what's going to happen. So what does the season look like for you right now? You know, what are you planning for? And you know, obviously it could change, but you know, what is the plan for Johnston basketball right now?
Yeah, well, you know, everything's going off right now as scheduled. So we just had a Zoom meeting with all the coaches around the state with the unions talking about these are the precautions that are going to have to be taken on each bench. You know, they're going to limit the number of chairs, so the number of people that you can have on your bench. They're going to really strongly encourage that you're wearing a mask on the bench. When you go in the game, you take it off, you come out, you put it back on. You have to sanitize your hands. When you're going in the game and coming out of the game, you have to sanitize your hands at all times. No sharing of towels. Just little things like that. The balls got to get sanitized every, like, quarters and timeouts and stuff. You know, the number of spectators that will be allowed in those games will be kind of up to the schools, but, you know, maybe probably just parents, couple per player. So right now, what we've been doing at Johnston for girls is, and I know the boys have been doing it too, as we could be talking, we make our kids wear a mask where we're playing. So we go to open gym where they come in and shoot. We're on them. That mask needs to be up. We go into condition after school now 3 times a week, trying to get in condition up to the season. We make them condition with their masks on. We tell them, you just have to get used to it. I know it's going to be hard, but the more we get used to it, the mask is really going to be that key for teams. If you are wearing masks at practice and you're around other people that, you know, if you all have masks on, if somebody contracts COVID, then if you have a mask on, it's kind of like, well, you're going to be all right. Then only the person with COVID is going to have to sit out. Whereas if you are a team that is going to practice without masks, if somebody's in contact or somebody gets it, then your whole team is going to have to sit out. And that's so we're really trying to get our girls conditioned to, you know, mask all the time, you know, keep them up. You need a break, step out quick, take a breather, get a drink, put it back on and get in. So, you know, I think that's really going to be the key is the mask, but they're doing things to, like I said, mitigate and, you know, clean and, you know, keep space between people. So, you know, even officials, they're trying to encourage them to either use the electronic whistle or use, I think they have spit shields or covers that go on whistles. So use those too. Just everything that you could imagine is being thrown out there. So, and it could change next week where they could say, oh, there's just too many cases in Iowa. We're gonna take a break for a month or whatever. So we just got to roll with the punches and hope we get the season in.
Yeah. And I think that's what, you know, is making it so hard for everybody is that it changed on day-to-day basis. And, you know, it sounds like the association's taking every precaution they can, you know, whether that's going to be enough, you just don't know that either. So, you know, definitely a tough time. I don't know about you guys, but I still think it's, you know, really weird looking social media on the internet and seeing these teams, whether high school or college, practicing with masks on. Like, I just don't know how I would be, if I would be okay with that. But obviously it's the world we live in and it's gotta be done.
Yeah, we've been doing it now for a few months, so it's gotten easier for me. I just recognize that I go to work and I have to work in the school. I got to wear a mask all the time. And so now everyone I'm around just has masks on all the time. So I've kind of gotten used to it. But yeah, it's funny, like just COVID in general, you know, you think back to March where, when we were playing the state championship game, there was, I think the union said there was over 10,000 people in Wells Fargo Arena for our championship game. And that was, I mean, that atmosphere was just amazing, where the next Friday, so we played on Friday, and the week, 7 days later on that Friday, and I heard you had Justin Ola on, where I was watching that, and, you know, there's 300 people in there. It's just, that would have been, I don't know how you'd play. That'd be so weird going from having 10, you know, thousands of people to nobody in a big place like Wells Fargo. So I was just happy that we got ours in. It was the best atmosphere I'd ever been in, you know, for a girls' basketball game with that many people. So it was really fortunate that we were able to do that.
Yeah, definitely. Everything happened pretty quick, and you know, we were even talking to him about it too. That was honestly, if you look at it, it'd be interesting to see around America, was one of the last events that would maybe have had fans in it would be the Iowa State High School Boys Basketball Tournament. Yeah, but definitely a different atmosphere for sure. So, well, Coach, we like to end the podcast with a little section called Rapid Fire, where Brian is going to hit you with a couple questions, some fun, some maybe a little bit tougher, and just let us know what you think.
All right,
Coach. First one here. What's the best basketball movie of all time?
Oh, I'm partial to Hoosiers, but I also like The Pistol. The Pistol was one of my favorites when I was younger. You can't beat that. I think we throw in The Pistol. If we have a bus ride for Johnston, I think The Pistol and Hoosiers are usually a couple of the movies that I would take with us and make sure I threw in.
Hey, can't go wrong with old Pistol Pete. I mean, talk about a player ahead of his time too. I mean, just unbelievable.
Yes.
That story. And actually there's a guy out in West Des Moines that I played a little pickup with, I think was with Pistol Pete on the day that he died. Like, crazy.
Oh, really?
Story. Yeah. Crazy story. A guy out at the West Des Moines Community Center, I think was playing basketball or shooting with him and something when he fell down at the gym. And yeah, it was crazy. Crazy deal.
Try to ask kids today about Pistol Pete and they're not even gonna know who that is.
Nope, we'll have no idea. That's for sure. So what's the best place to go get a piece of pizza in the metro area here?
Oh, I've really been on Rosati's here the last there's Rosati's close to Prairie View School where I work, so they have a lunch special for $5 and a huge piece of pizza, and it's really good. I've been hitting that up like once or twice a week since school started, so I really like a slice of Rosati's.
Love it. Who's the greatest baseball player of all time?
To me, it's not even close. It's Ty Cobb. So I was big into baseball. So my man cave was all baseball when I first got married, and every Ty Cobb book there was, I've read it. And just looking at that guy and the stats that he put up as a player in that era, like, I don't know how anybody could ever do that again. And people don't, I mean, he was really not a nice guy. So he has a really bad rap. People don't like him because he was really not nice at all. And, to me, I'm a Yankees fan. I grew up with Yankees, and, you know, people, Ruth is going to be that guy. And I was like, to me, it's Ty Cobb.
Yeah, that most of the great ones don't end up being nice guys for some reason. So I think there's something to be said about that.
True.
So, okay. So going Mason City, we asked Justin the same question. Who's the best player to come out of Mason City, Horner or Dean Oliver?
Just those two?
Yep, just those two.
Well, just out of those two, Dean Oliver was by far probably the better player. If Dean had Jeff's size at 6'3", 6'4", Dean would have probably been in the league for years, but he was just small. So, I mean, you know, when I was growing up, we were at the Y every, you know, three or four times a week in Mason City, and I'd be in high school and Dean would be in fifth and sixth grade, and he would come up and just run us all off the floor, you know, in fifth grade. And you're like, who is this kid, you know? And so it was fun, you know, to get to play with him all the time when he was little and, you know, get to know him a little bit and his dad and his family and then follow him, you know, just having some pride as a Mohawk and following him. But, oh, I mean, Jeff too. I mean, Jeff was, you know, he's right there as a probably close second. But there's a guy in the 70s named Dennis Schaefer that he was a big time player also. So people probably don't know about him or wouldn't know his name, but he had to go to the junior college route for some reason, but then was like a top, I think he was, might've been a first round draft pick in the league. So if I remember right.
Definitely had some good players and some good teams come out of that area. That's for sure.
Yeah. I was lucky when I was in high school, you know, Mason City, when I was a freshman and sophomore, had they're ranked number one. They're called the bomb squad. And that's all they did was shoot threes and from deep. And they just never could get past Waterloo East. Bob Horner just had trouble with Waterloo East. They would have tons of great talent and teams, and he'd always lose to Waterloo East in the sub-state final. Just couldn't get past them.
Those Waterloo East teams will get in your shorts, play a little defense.
They were good. Oh, Coach McGraw, man, he was smoking heaters in the practice and just letting the boys do whatever they wanted, but they were good.
Tough, too, man, real tough. I mean, they come from a little bit different cloth, that's for sure. So, favorite basketball shoe?
Oh, I was never really a shoe guy growing up, but going on nostalgia here, I really liked my Reebok pumps when I think I was a sophomore. You know, something new and something different. I'd have a pair of Jordans here or there, but I never really got into sneakers that way. But just going on something that was a little nostalgic would. Remember getting the Reebok pumps and just thinking those were the coolest things ever.
I don't know if you didn't have a pair of pumps back in the day, you weren't a true sneakerhead.
That's so right.
I see what you're saying there.
Wasn't it that D Brown that he'd go and hammer a dunk and then pump him up a couple times?
Yeah.
No, the guy loved the pumps. Those that's a classic shoe there. All right, let's bridge the gap between Mason City and the metro area. Are you gonna take Tasty Taco or Taco Tico?
Me, I was never a Taco Tico guy. I'd be Tasty Taco all day.
It's so funny because obviously, so I'll go in and I'm like the center point between Fort Dodge and Mason City, depending on what direction you're going. And so some people, Taco Tico, with the Mason City Fort Dodge, they either love it or they're like so overhyped. Obviously you heard Justin on here. He was all about it. He was Taco Tico for life.
If I was going to tacos in Mason City, I'd just go to Taco John's. I never went to Taco Tico, so.
That's great. This is not even on my sheet here, but speaking of Mason City, the Southbridge Mall, in its heyday, that thing was something special.
I mean, I think I was just talking to my wife last week. It was a Friday night, and I said, you know, I would have been like 30 years ago on right now. I'd have been at Southbridge Mall walking around, you know, going to a movie or doing – that place was always – we were all there. I mean, I think it was built in like 85 when I was 10, and you know, we spent all the weekends up at the movie theater there walking around, you know, probably causing trouble, but there's nothing there now. I mean, that thing is empty.
It's rough to see that transition. It's a, unfortunately, as I went by yesterday, it reminds me a little bit of Valley West Mall, unfortunately, how that thing was in its heyday was something else, and now it's pretty desolate.
I remember coming down here when it was Merle Hay Mall. I think I was a kid. We'd take trips to come down and go to Merle Hay Mall.
They used to have that laser tag in there. We'd go in the Merle Hay Mall off state tournament and play laser tag.
Yeah. Yep. And then there's nothing there now either. So
it's too bad. But all right. So favorite visiting gym for you to coach in?
Are we talking about high school gym?
Any gym.
Well, the favorite gym is my Wells Fargo. I've just been blessed to be, you know, said 6 years in a row here, 5 years in a row at Waukee. So I think, 11 out of the last 14 years, to be able to coach at Wells Fargo. And it's, I mean, I remember going to games in the barn and, you know, I liked it, you know, watching the game there. But I just don't, I mean, now kids look at it, this is like a professional arena. Kids love being in it. And if you can have it like the state championship, I mean, we're lucky because typically, like you said, you know, you're playing a CIML team down at Wells Fargo. So when 5A girls basketball plays, it's packed. I mean, it's, there's 5, 6, 7, up to 10,000 people in that gym, and it's just a different atmosphere. And that's why the union kind of, they changed their format a few years ago and put the 5A schools at starting at 10 o'clock on Monday, because when they'd have a small school or a 4A school or somebody, they weren't coming at 10 o'clock in the morning on Mondays. And they knew that, well, we're going to have CIML teams there for 5A. So maybe we'll move that and, get some more people there, and it's worked out great. So I think Wells Fargo.
That's obviously a good one. One thing I will say, I'll give credit to the association too. They make a production out of the state tournament. They do a great job from, just coverage to making it fun and a neat experience for the girls. Some of the highlight videos and just all the other extra stuff that comes with it. So it doesn't feel like just another game against Waukee for you guys either.
You're right. And, you know, there's always people talking about, well, why do we need two unions and why is there a girls union and a boys union? Because the girls, you know, in most other states are second class to the boys. The boys get everything. And here the girls are treated like, you know, they're queens. I mean, they get everything, and it's about them. And their state tournaments that they put on here for girls are, they're envied throughout the state. I mean, throughout all the states about when you look at you could watch a state tournament from another state for girls basketball where there's 1,000 people in the gym maybe or at a big arena. And you can watch ours where it's, you know, said it's packed and there's thousands. And our girls do it great. And I hope the girls union and the boys union stay split forever, because I think, you know, they treat our girls first class, and that's the way it needs to be.
Well, I mean, this is me speaking, but I think that probably there's a lot of boys team in the state that are envious of the way in which that the girls association does it. I mean, the boys side is so archaic and they just are not up with the times. The girls association is just head and shoulders above where the boys are at right now.
Yep. I would agree too. I agree with you. I don't want to say too much. I don't want to get in trouble with it.
No.
That's probably smart.
Yeah. So with that, Coach, we'll get you out on this. And you've mentioned it. You talked a little bit about it, but it's kind of the way we like to end on a positive note. But tell us a little bit about what's the best thing about being the head girls basketball coach at Johnston.
Right now, it's been just the community. I think the Johnston community supports our high school athletics so well. They come to the games. There were times where I didn't tweet something out and they would call this, you know, you'd have community members call, what happened to the game? I didn't see the tweet. They were trying to follow things, and they're always on top of it. And, you know, they treat us well. At Johnson, just the people that have been part of our program have been blessed with, great parents and great people. So, you know, you're always going to have times where everyone's not happy. And you're going to have to go through some of that. But for the most part, 9 years I've been there, I mean, I haven't had a lot of unhappy people in our program. And I think that's because of the type of kids they are and the work that they have and their parents. So I would say, you know, just that community in general. And it's not, I coach tennis at Waukee, and our community in Waukee for athletics is good too. So, it's been a special place for me for 9 years. Like, I don't want to, you know, people ask me, are you going to apply for the job at Waukee, since you teach in Waukee and, you know, coach there too, and you live in the district? And I was like, no, I that's not what my goal is. My goal is to stay at Johnston and, keep working with this community and these players and keep winning state titles here if we can. So.
Well, perfect. I definitely agree with you. Obviously, there's winning always helps that, but yeah, there's definitely a lot of buy-in, a lot of participation from everybody within the community, and definitely an overall excitement around the girls program. And like you said, that's a credit to the work that everyone's putting in over the last couple of years. And so, overall, Coach, we appreciate you taking some time and jumping on with us. We obviously have our fingers crossed that, one, that you get to have a season, and two, that at some point we get to come and watch the girls play a little bit this year.
Yeah, guys, I appreciate it. This was fun. I had a good time. So, like you said, hopefully we get it going and you guys can watch some of the games. But thanks a lot for having me.
Yeah. And, you know, I would reiterate everything Brian just mentioned. We appreciate your time. Hopefully we can have have a normal season going on here soon. And, you know, we can, as you said, watch a little bit of Johnston girls basketball here, but, and we appreciate your time. Like we said, we appreciate our listeners as well. If you like what you hear, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating wherever you catch your podcast. You can catch us on all social media platforms. On Facebook, search The Shooter's Touch. On Twitter and Instagram, The Shooter's Touch IA. And always remember, shooters shoot. Cause I'm right in my mind, hustling harder than ever before. Saying I change cause I like when I shine. The diamonds hit different like Mike in his prime. I got the shooter's touch, yeah. Can't nobody ball like me. Blue face, honey.